For the lesson this morning, I want to invite you to the Old Testament book of Joshua, Joshua chapter 14. And I want to just open with a story that will set up what we want to study today. Just by way of a little background, we're on the back end of the story of the conquest, and now they're beginning to think about parceling out the land that they have conquered. And here in chapter 14, we're going to begin down at verse 6. There's a conversation that takes place between Joshua and Caleb about the parcel of ground that Caleb wants. So follow this with me. Verse 6, it says, "Thus the sons of Judah drew near to Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite said to him, 'You know the word which the Lord spoke to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me and Kadesh Barnea. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me to Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought word back to him as it was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt with fear, but I followed the Lord fully. So Moses swore that day, saying, "Surely the land on which your foot has trodden will be an inheritance to you and to your children forever, because you have followed the Lord my God fully. Now behold, the Lord has let me live, just as he spoke, these 45 years from the time that the Lord spoke the word to Moses when Israel walked in the wilderness. And now behold, I am 85 years old today. I am still as strong today as I was in the day Moses sent me. And my strength, as my strength was then, so my strength is now for war and for going out and for coming in. Now then, give me this hill country about which the Lord spoke on that day. For you heard on that day that the Anakim were there with great fortified cities. Perhaps the Lord will be with me, and I will drive them out as the Lord has spoken.' So Joshua blessed him and gave Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, for an inheritance." This story makes me smile. I think it's kind of a funny story. You notice that the Spirit thought it was very important for us to know how old Caleb was, right? That point is emphasized. And in verse 11, notice, he wants Joshua to know that even though he is 85, he can still take this land that he's promised, and he can go up there with his people, and they can run out the enemies that are still there, and they can take that piece of land, something that the rest of Israel is not going to do. They're not going to finish driving out the enemies. But you hear in verse 11, it's almost as though he's not convinced Joshua is going to buy that. And so he's arguing or making the argument that I could still do this. And I'm amazed by that. That's why I love this story. Here's a guy that probably could have listed the reasons for why he ought to be given some safe, fully conquered territory with beautiful streams and a cabin in the hills, right? Where he could go sit on the porch and retire. And he's doing exactly the opposite. He's trying to find a way to stay in the game. There's still work to do, something that he gets that Israel doesn't. There are still enemies to be driven out. He wants the part he's promised, and he wants to continue to be part of that work. It's an impressive story. And it makes me think about me and you. Because I think, like Caleb, no matter what stage of life we're at, we can always find obstacles that get in the way and perhaps even become excuses for why we don't do more to serve the Lord and be part of His great mission. In fact, will you just pause and think about yourself this morning as I say that? At the stage of life that you're at, what are the obstacles for you? What makes it hard for you to be a meaningful part in the work of God's kingdom? What gets in your way? What can morph into an excuse that gives you a pass on the work that God needs you to do? Will you think about that? Because no matter where you are, they're there. And I am suspicious that how we answer may have something to do with where we are in life. I spend a lot of time talking to these young people. Thank y'all for sitting together over here. I appreciate that. It does kind of make you a target this morning. I'm sorry. But you know, young people who are still living at home and still kind of in the growing up years, one of their struggles is figuring out what they can do. And sadly, I think at too many church families, young people are kind of overlooked, and we really don't start thinking of them and involving them until they're grown-up disciples. And so one of the things that they share with me is sometimes it's hard to know what your place is and to know what I can do when I'm in the growing up years. And then you get into the single years and life gets busy. Maybe that's the time for getting an education, 4 or 5 or however many years it takes to do that. And then beginning a career, beginning a job, getting out, start living life. It's a busy time of life and easy to be distracted by all of those activities that are going on. But you know, I talk to young single people and sometimes their struggle is, I just don't really know where I fit in the church family. I mean, everybody else is kind of getting married at this season and they're starting their families and I'm kind of not there yet. And so I'm not a kid anymore, but I'm not with, can I say it, kind of the grown-up section of the group. I'm kind of in this middle phase where I'm moving into adulthood and I really don't know what my place is. And they struggle with that. And then you get into the family season, right? Like a lot of you are in. And what's the struggle? What's the challenge? Life just gets so busy, right? If any of the people on the early end of life are thinking, surely this is going to slow down at some point. Nope. It's going to get worse and worse and worse, busier and busier. Ask anybody raising kids. What mom doesn't know the struggle of trying to find some quiet devotional time to commune with God while she's running around keeping up with 3 little kids at home, right? What a struggle. And if you thought that's going to get easier when they're teenagers and they're more independent and they could dress themselves and all that kind of stuff, nope, doesn't get easier. Ask the parents who have teenagers in this crowd. They'll tell you. The challenge of balancing career and what they're doing at school and all the after-school activities, balancing that with needing to have devotional time and making time for services and spiritual activities. And it's a struggle, right, all the way through. That's why all of us are looking forward to retirement. Because when the kids are out of the house, right, the kids are out of the house, and I don't have all that stuff to do, bringing up kids, and I'm not in my career anymore, I'm retired. Then it's easy, and I'll have all the time in the world to devote to the Lord, right? Except retired people keep saying to me, I am busier in my retirement than I ever was when I was working a job. I don't know how I had time for a job. Y'all need to quit saying that, because that is discouraging to the rest of us. And then the other thing that happens as we get older is time begins to take its toll on the body, right? And suddenly all these things I'd like to be doing, your body is saying, yeah, you may do them, but you're going to do them a whole lot more slowly than you used to do. You see my point? It doesn't matter where you are on the timeline. There are always obstacles. Always obstacles that become excuses for why I can't do more, why I can't be more involved. Which sets up a really great sermon to fuss at all of us, right? We need to quit making excuses. That's a great lesson, and it's not the one I'm going to preach this morning. Because I think there's a flip side of this that I really would rather work, that I want you to see with me, because I want you to appreciate that, yes, there are obstacles at every stage of life, but at every stage of life, there are also opportunities for me to be involved in a meaningful way in the work of God's kingdom. In fact, it's not just that there are opportunities at every season, there are unique opportunities. Wherever you are, there are doors that are open to you right now that one day are going to close and never be open to you again. Every one of us this morning is in a unique season with unique opportunities. And I think we need to see that. Go with me in the New Testament now to Ephesians chapter 5. And let me give you a passage that we'll use as sort of the foundation for what we're going to think about this morning. This is Ephesians 5. Look down at verse 15, where Paul says, "Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil." So two things I want you to notice with me. First of all, he urges us to walk wisely. That's a theme all the way through this letter. He wants us to walk wisely. I need, to my point this morning, I need to have the wisdom to see the opportunities that are in front of me in the stage of life where I find myself. And then secondly, what does he say about those? Are you still looking at verse 16? Make the most of your opportunities. Once I see the opportunities I have, I need to make the most of them. And so that's really what I'd like to unpack for a little while this morning as we think about serving God at every season of life. For the season that you are in, what are these opportunities, these special opportunities that I have to serve the Lord? I want to invite you to walk through life with me a little bit this morning and to think about that. I'm going to start with y'all, okay? So that way y'all don't have to hang with me all the way through. Just hang with me through this first part, okay? Can I talk about young people and kind of the unique season they are in and the opportunities they have? So I especially want to say to y'all, I want y'all to hear me on this, okay? They're all kind of laughing at me right now, and I don't know why. But I want y'all to hear this first part with me. God has a very high regard for all of you. Okay? And because of that, he has very high expectations. Go over to 1 Timothy chapter 4. Notice what he says to this young preacher in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12. Probably going to be a familiar verse. A lot of teen weekends have built around 1 Timothy 4:12. Notice he says, "Let no one look down on your youthfulness. Don't let anybody devalue you because you are young." Don't buy that when people treat you like you're not important simply because you're young. But notice what he goes on to say in verse 12. "Do not let anyone look down on your youthfulness, but rather in speech, conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself an example of those who believe." So in every facet of discipleship, everything it means to follow Jesus, you be an example to everyone else. Now think about what's tucked in there. Hear this. God believes that young people have the power to be an example to everybody else. You ever thought about that? But you have a power to be an example to everyone else. In fact, we see that in the Bible, right? How many young people stories are there in the Bible? Think about that. I mean, are names coming to your mind? Stories about young people who did great things, like Joseph, like young King David who battled the giant, like Josiah, the 8-year-old king, like Daniel. Scattered throughout the story of the text are young people that the Holy Spirit holds up and tells their stories to be an example. And I think in those stories, brothers and sisters, we need to see the power that exists in our young people, the ability they have to make a difference. You need to see that too. So what are the unique opportunities that come to a person when they're young? Well, one of the things y'all need to appreciate is that you're in the prime of life physically, right? I really expected everyone over the age of 40 to amen what I just said. Where are you, Greg? Come on, man. It's right there. We know it. It's all good in your 20s and 30s, but suddenly you wake up on your birthday at 40 and you can't see anymore. And then you wake up at 50 and every week it's some new pain in your body. And I just got to the 60s, I'll let you know. I'm not sure how that one's going to go, but I don't think it's going to be good. Because you get to the top of that bell curve, right? And all of a sudden life's been going on good and you're healthy and you're feeling good. And then it falls off, right? And physically, we begin to decline. So when we're in our youth, I think young people have this ability to bring an excitement and a passion and a vitality to the work of God. That's infectious. It impacts other people. I tell you, one of the cool things that I've seen over the years is that how young people doing their thing from God blesses and encourages older people. Y'all realize that? There's nothing cooler than seeing a young people do stuff. That's why that little Devo we do once a month, that's why so many old people come and watch you do that, because we sit there and say, yes. It's not that John doesn't do a good job leading songs. It's just so cool when one of these guys does. It's not that I don't appreciate someone in the church bringing me food when my wife's been in the hospital, but when it's four 13-year-old girls, how cool is that, right? There's a special capacity young people have to do that. And so with all the stuff you've got going on in life, you got all this stuff with school, and you've got all these activities after school, and you've got all this stuff on TikTok to keep up with. Remember that in the midst of all of that, the Lord is always the most important thing. That was kind of backwards, the old inspiring the young. Thanks, Greg. Go back to the book of Ecclesiastes with me just for a minute. I love this little section at the end of chapter 11 that Jeff is probably going to say is a bad chapter break, right? Where is he? Yeah, you don't like that one either? I didn't think you. I was thought about you all week looking at this text. Jeff wouldn't like this. But he's right about this, because chapter end of chapter 11 really flows nicely into 12. So notice he's talking to young people. Verse 9, he says, "Rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of your young manhood, and follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes." What's he saying? Enjoy your youth. He does warn. "Yet know that God will bring you into judgment for all these things." You know, enjoy your youth, but remember you're accountable for your youth. "So," verse 10, "remove grief and anger from your heart and put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting." But then notice what he says in 12 and 1. "Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, when you will say, I have no delight in them." And then if we just keep reading through chapter 12, what he talks about is what I just said, how the body begins to decline, how we decline physically. And so in your youth, remember your Creator. I hope moms and dads and grandparents will join me in helping these young people to remember that the most important thing in life is their relationship with God. And this is the season for that to be ingrained. We can do a little bit here in the church building, but this has to be a mom and dad task at home, with making that stuff the priority every single day. I think another advantage that young people have is they're surrounded in their lives by all these people their age who are trying to figure out life. who for the first time are beginning to think seriously as they get toward the end of those high school years as an adulthood is approaching, who begin to think about life and what life is really all about. And so there is this glorious opportunity to take these people who are probably more open than they will ever be the rest of their life to hearing something different. An awesome opportunity for you to start talking to them about Jesus, about being a light to the world like Jesus talked about in Matthew chapter 5. We've already got young people in this church family who are doing that. That's why scattered in this auditorium this morning are young men and young women who are here without mom and dad. They're here because they had a friend at school who talked to them about Jesus and helped them come to faith, and now they're serving the Lord. And they're sitting here today. And I commend you guys for doing that work. And I would encourage you to keep doing that work. You have a vital part in all of this. You have opportunities in your life that in a few years are going to be past. So what did the Holy Spirit say about that? Make the most of your opportunities. Because before you know it, high school is going to be over. And you're going to be moving on to that next phase of life. What should we call this? The single season of life? When I think about that period after being a kid and before being a family man, I'm drawn to the words of Paul in 1 Corinthians 7. Will you look there with me? And there's just one thing that I want you to notice here. In fact, one phrase particularly. But I recognize there's a bigger context going on, okay? And I don't want to break all that down for our purposes today. But I do want you to notice this little thing that he says. Pick up with me in chapter 7 and verse 32, where he says, I want you to be free from concern. One who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife, and his interests are divided. I don't think that means that it's better not to be married. Remember, God created marriage, and he created it for our good, okay? But what I do think he is saying is that the person who chooses to marry takes on responsibilities that will require his time and energy. He talks about a married man who has responsibilities to a wife, God-given responsibilities to a wife that will require him to spend time with her and to invest his energy in that relationship. And then you bring kids into the world, right? And I have to bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord, because that's what the Lord tells me to do, which takes time and takes energy that is diverted away from other activities. A person who is unmarried, who's in that single season of your life, has undisturbed time and energy that isn't going into family relationships. Now, someone might say, but I want my time to be spent on a spouse and a family. I want to get married. I want to have kids. And that's terrific. It's okay to want that. Just don't view yourself as being in a spiritual holding pattern until that time comes. In fact, I would say just the opposite is true. That when I am single, there are opportunities to serve that I'm only going to have at that season of life. Because once I'm married, then for the time that one of us is alive, I'm committed to that relationship. And when I have kids, I don't know, do we ever get over parenting kids? I mean, I know they move off and don't take our calls all the time. But I don't know that we ever stop parenting. That's a life mission, right? And so before that time comes, I have opportunity to do what? Maybe mentor one of these young people. you've just passed through their season. You already know about some of the things they're going to. Maybe it'd be a good time for you to be a friend to one of them. Or maybe you can notice someone who's bearing the burden of a single parent leading a family. And maybe you can jump in and help out and serve that family to do what Galatians 6:2 says, to help bear some of that burden. We've been blessed over the course of 2025 with a lot of new disciples. And one of the great challenges of having new disciples is incorporating them and making them part of the family. For some people, church is a brand new thing to them, and they don't even know about how to become part of a family. And we can help with that. And we've got all kinds of older disciples here. Some of them were in that alone season where their spouses died and they're by themselves. You know, it would absolutely delight them if some young person showed up and spent an hour drinking coffee and listening. There are opportunities there to serve. Don't hear me say that I think those responsibilities are just for single people. I'm just saying you're in a life where it's a whole lot easier to do that now than it will be to do later on. It is a season with unique opportunities. You need to make the most of them. I think anybody with a family understands what Paul was saying in 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 34 when he talked about interest being divided. So what do I do when I'm in that season? Not single, I found a spouse, I'm married, I've got the family I always wanted. And boy, things are busy, right? Over the years, I've had some moms with little kids who would come to me sometimes after I'd preached a sermon. And they would say, you know, I feel so guilty because I know I need to be praying more. And they say, frankly, run around with these three little kids at home, it's hard to sleep, much less find quietness to talk to the Lord or quietness to sit down and spend in His book. I've had ladies come up to me after services and say, well, I got about a third of that today. And maybe that's where some of our moms will be this morning. I got about a third of it. The kids got the rest. If you struggle with guilt about all of that, can I tell you two things? First of all, never stop struggling with that. As you try to find that balance between taking care of these small humans in my house who need so much energy and attention and investing in my relationship with God, never stop wrestling with that, because there isn't a season of life where we don't need God. And I got to keep working on that. I got to keep nurturing that relationship. It may be hard to find time to pray, but I need to pray. And it may especially be hard to find a work of service I could do in the church family because I'm just busy otherwise. But keep looking for that time to serve. If for no other reason, you're setting an example for your children. What do you want them to see? And you. Keep fighting that battle for balance. I know we have so many great families in this church who, in spite of the busyness of that season of life, are also busy in the kingdom. It can be done because we have so many folks who are doing that. Secondly, can I just say to you, don't underestimate the kingdom value of raising your family. That's God-given, right? Ephesians 6:4, bring up your children and in discipline and instruction of the Lord. And when parents do that, I know that's first and foremost meant to be a blessing for the kids. That's right. But it's also a blessing for us as you're raising future disciples. It's easy to see that in a church family like this where we have so many multi-generational families here where grandparents and parents and grandchildren are all in the same place. You see the value of that work's being done. Let me also add this, because I think there are opportunities at this season of life that are really, really important to appreciate. You know, a lot of people, just in the world generally, a lot of people, when they get into that young adult phase of life, walk away from religion. Y'all realize that, right? There's a big exit that takes place, usually about the time kids go off to college. They start getting involved in some things that they shouldn't, or they just lose interest in religion, and there tends to be a crowd that migrates away from religion during that period. But here's the interesting thing. When they get married and they have kids, suddenly they also start thinking about God again. At least many of them do. And they begin to want their kids to have the same values that they were raised with. And so sometimes when you get into the family season, people start leaning toward God. Now, I wanted you to think about that, because when you go to the kindergarten preschool program, look around the auditorium. Because you're sitting in a room with a bunch of people who grew up going to church, aren't going to church now, but they're thinking about it. And when you go to the Little League ball game and you're sitting in the stands with all those loud, obnoxious parents, right? Look around at the people in the stands. If they look old like me, they're grandparents. But if they look like you, there's a high probability that they grew up going to church somewhere and they've been gone for a while, but they're thinking about coming back to Jesus. And God puts you right in the middle of them. That's a special season of life. People you can talk to. So I urge you, don't waste that opportunity. Because frankly, Heidi and I have been empty nesters now for a little over a decade. I desperately miss that season. When everywhere I went and did something with my kids, I was right in the middle of that crowd. Had lots and lots of people to talk to. Not that much anymore. That's something that you can do that is unique to this season of time. You need to make the most of your time. Now, I kind of hope that I would already be out of time and I wouldn't talk about this last scary category, because I think it's the scariest thing that I have to talk about this morning. Mainly because I know that all of you who are in this category don't want to be there. And if I try to put you there, you'll be mad at me when we get done. So this senior season of life certainly adds some difficulties, doesn't it? But also some opportunities. You know, there's this theme that runs through Scripture from beginning to end. This idea that younger people need to respect older people. And several different ways that maps out in the Scripture. But the fundamental idea is there, that younger people need to respect older people. I think there's a reason for that. First of all, hopefully, over the time that we've been living our life, we've been in the book. And so there's been knowledge gained from years of study. But not just knowledge. Knowledge that's intertwined with mileage. We've lived a long time. And we've done a lot of things. And experienced a lot of things. And made some mistakes along the way. And learned from those. And so hopefully over time, the wisdom from the word is intertwined with mileage that gives us something to offer the people back up the road a little bit from us. And that's actually God's plan. God wants older people to take what they've learned from their study and their experiences and help the people behind them on the road. And so that's why we have passages like Titus 2 in verse 3. Remember this one, Titus 2 in verse 3, where the Spirit through Paul says to older women, teach younger women to love your husbands and to love your children, right? What's he saying? He's saying an older woman, you see, I would never say who was in that category in this crowd, right? I would never describe you as an older woman. But you know who you are. And what God says to you is, take what you've learned through your study and what you've learned through your experience and help the younger women who are struggling with that stuff. We're not very good at that. I think sometimes younger women don't want to hear it. Younger people don't want to hear it, and older people are reluctant to interfere. When we do that, we're messing up God's plan, because that's how this is supposed to work. But here's the thing. You don't get the wisdom without the mileage. So it doesn't come until this stage of life. It's only people who are old who are able to blend the two and then share. And so I want to say to those of us who are in the senior season of life, this is not a time to retire. God's got stuff he wants us to do. It's the time to have the spirit of Caleb. You remember what he says to Joshua? I'm as good as I was when I was 40. That is not true. But what he really was saying is, I could still do it. There is still a work for me to do. And that's true for me and you too. And I got to tell you, over the years that I've been preaching, I have seen it. I have seen senior, seasoned disciples who were, just like Caleb, were looking for a way to stay in the game. I've told y'all before about Jim and Edith. It was a couple I knew, one church I worked with. Elderly, but they would come in 30 minutes early. They'd be in the lobby waiting to greet with a smile everyone who came in the door. Sometimes propped up on a walker, but they were still there. They were finding a way to stay in the game. And Bonnie was a gifted Bible class teacher. She was getting into her late 70s, early 80s, but still really, really good. She started doing this terrible thing. She started talking about retiring. And so I went and had a private conference with her, and I said, look, you can retire as soon as my kids have gone through your grade. She was a great teacher. I said, my kids need to go through your class. 70, 80, still finding a way to be in the game. Connie was an elderly widow living in a college town. But every Sunday night at her place, she hosted a devotion. She provided the place, she provided the food, and the college kids would come over and hang out at her house. She was a beloved character where I went to school. She was still in the game. Howard was in his mid-90s and homebound. Mid-90s and homebound. But caregivers came to take care of him. And so what did he do? He taught him the gospel. We baptized one of his caregivers. In her 80s, Retta patrolled the back of the auditorium. She was an expert at spotting discouraged people. So if you frowned, she saw it. And y'all were going to talk before you got out the door. In fact, she would come up to me when everybody had about left, and Reddit would say, I talked to George this morning. This and this happened to him. Get on the phone. Go take care of him. She was like the general in charge of the back of the church building. And we have so many people here that I could put in that category. I could tell Kleinwood stories, but if I did, I would be calling you a senior, and you'd be mad at me, so I'm not doing it. We don't retire. We look for reasons to stay in the game. So do you hear what I'm saying today? Is it clicking? Everybody has something to do. Everybody. So no more excuses. I need to be abounding in the work of the Lord no matter what stage of life I find myself at. You remember there's this repeated phrase about Caleb in Joshua 14. I tried to emphasize it when I was reading the account. Three times in that section, it says that he served the Lord fully. There was nothing half-hearted about Caleb's faith. When everybody else wouldn't go up, he was the one saying, we can go take the land, right? When everybody else is ready to retire and stop the fighting and stop clearing the land, he's like, there's still a spot I can work on. I need you to send me there. He served the Lord fully, and one piece of that fullness was the fact that he served all the way to the end of his life. May the same be true of me and you. Is that you? Can you say that? That you are fully giving your life to this season and the opportunities God has provided for you. Maybe there's some disciples here that what you've been doing is you've been showing up enough to keep the elders off your back and keeping a pew warm. You know what you know about that? Everyone knows this. It is not enough. We know it. And so maybe for you, this needs to be a season of renewal where you acknowledge that. You just say, I need to do better. And ask your family to help you. That's why we exist, to help each other with exactly that kind of thing. Or maybe you need to acknowledge your faith in Jesus for the first time. Let him wash you clean in baptism and become a disciple. I don't know what your needs are, but you do, and he does, and we just want to help. If you need to respond to him today, come on down to the front while we stand, while we sing.